Own an Airstream? Check out our book, Restoring a Dream, available on Amazon.com.
Have a specific episode you want to hear? No problem. Head over to thevap.locals.com. You can listen to any episode anytime. Stream it directly to your phone or on your computer. You can also pick from one of our many curated playlists to hear specific topics. So head on over to thevap.locals.com.
You're listening to The VAP, episode 43, The Spring Polishing Show.
With 2 tons of aluminum hitched to his bumper, cruising down the internet superhighway, The VAP is streaming right to your ears. Vintage Airstream Podcast. And now your host for the Vintage Airstream Podcast, Tim Shepard.
Living in aluminum.
We are back again with episode 43. We got Colin Hyde of GSM Vehicles. Welcome, Colin.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Come to you from beautiful, sunny, or quasi-sunny and warm upstate New York.
Cool. And we got Rob Baker on the line. Welcome, Rob.
Hello, hello. I'm coming to you from... I'm home this weekend here in central New York, so...
Yeah. It's kind of unusual for you being home like that.
Yeah, yeah, my boss, they've kind of agreed that, you know, we're getting close within a couple of weeks of this baby coming, so wow. I'm staying closer to home.
Good idea. Well, we promised you last time that we're going to talk with Tom Newmalin of PerfectPolish.com. He sells the different Nuvite products to help people polish their trailers to a beautiful and shiny surface. So let's see if we can get Tom on the line and find out more about it.
The podcast cool kids go for.
Okay, we got Tom Newmalin online from PerfectPolish.com. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
How you doing, Tom?
Doing fine.
Good.
My first podcast.
Now you're famous.
For 15 minutes.
There you go. Well, we wanted to get you on and talk about the different kind of polishing methods that are out there. And you're probably a good guy to know to hear a lot of first-timers' questions when they call you up and they have no idea what to do. So what are some common questions that you hear?
Well, fortunately, most of the people who call me have spent some time researching it and have visited the website. And we have kind of a wealth of information there. We try to post everything on the website that we can reasonably post, so that we don't have to answer so many questions over the phone, because you need to look at pictures of the equipment and so forth, and look at the processes, photographs of trailers being polished and so forth, to get a good handle on what's required. So they come back with specific questions about, oh, my trailer's got this sort of corrosion or that sort of corrosion. What should I do to, you know, how do I start on this? It's something that's just a little bit off of the standard travel trailer.
What kind of different... amounts of corrosion? I mean, is there a way to gauge it when you're looking at your trailer going, oh, how can I describe this? I mean, it looks like this, but...
Well, the question I usually ask them is, it's smooth to the touch, and that really reveals a lot. Yeah, if it's smooth to the touch, you've got pretty good aluminum. Or if it's just rough in a few areas, typically the tops, of course, are badly corroded because they've been exposed to the sun directly for long periods of time. And the sides are generally in good condition. And so try to start that way and have him go around a trailer, so to speak, and describe the condition of the aluminum. And, of course, up in front you've got rock chips and scrapes and things. And so every trailer has a variety of conditions. And they're looking for one solution to all of those situations, and they're really not. And so we explained to them the various grades of polishes and how they might be used effectively to tackle each and every area.
So after they figure out the basic condition of their trailer, I guess they need to know what are the methods of starting. What's like the first step if you're gonna get on the phone, order your products, and then start at your trailer? What are the steps in getting that perfect polish?
Well, most of these trailers, or a large percentage of them, have been clear coated, and the first step is to remove the remaining clear coat. And then the second step would be to do a thorough cleaning of the trailer. There are a lot of loose things that can come off and get caught up in the polishing process. Dirt that hides in awning rails and window slides and so forth. If it finds its way out while you're polishing and gets into your pad, you can do a lot of damage in 10 seconds. You know, you might have to spend quite a few hours just getting rid of that. So, you know, having a really squeaky clean trailer to begin with is quite important.
Okay. So can you describe the different types of grades of polish and the steps, which ones you would use first?
Well, the standard answer to that would be the F7 grade is our, what we call our standard compounding polish. And we have, it's a fairly aggressive polish. We have grades, though, that are more aggressive, and we have grades that are less aggressive. And we have some grades that have some special features, like work well for getting into pitted areas and cleaning out pits. The F7 is compounded with some small sharp particles that stay sharp, and it's a good all-around corrosion removal grade. If you've got some really serious damage, like rock chips and deep scrapes, you can go even more aggressive than that. You can use the F9 grade, which has the same basic formulation as the F7. It just has particles that are three times bigger, and it cuts a lot faster. So it's very handy for doing some of the really heavily damaged areas. And the G6 grade is kind of a, they call it their smart abrasive. It's the particles in it are quite large, but they're friable, I guess is the word you use. They break down during the process of polishing, and they break down into fairly soft particles. So you're really doing two steps in one, and people have noted that they can do some pretty heavy cutting, and when they're done with the cutting with the G6, they've got a fairly smooth surface. They don't have quite the pronounced swirls that you would have with, the F7 or the F9. So there's a lot of personal preferences involved, and though the one grade I haven't mentioned that was very commonly used is the C grade, and that has soft, round particles in it. And we would recommend that to be used on aluminum that's in pretty good shape, like the size of your trailer, typically. The principle being that you don't want to use anything more aggressive than you really need to use in a particular situation.
Okay, so you slowly work your way down into the finer grades to achieve that polish?
Right. And the final grade, which I hadn't talked about, is the finished grade, which is the S. And that's the final step, and that has no cut in it whatsoever. It just brings out the depth of image and clarity in the surface. You have to do all of the work with the coarser grades to prep your aluminum and to get a nice even finish on the aluminum before you go on to the finish grade.
So how do you know how much polish to order if you're going to want to start this? Let's say, I don't know what the standard size trailer is, what, 25 feet maybe?
Yeah. That's pretty typical, and people ask that question too, and it's usually around about 4 pounds would take to do a 25-foot trailer. You might have 2 pounds of the coarse grade, 1 pound of the intermediate grade, and a pound of the finish grade. The finish grade goes a very long way. A pound of it will do most any size trailer that you can imagine. And when I do my airplane, you only use about an eighth of a pound to do my airplane, so... one of the features of these polishes is that a little bit goes a long way. You tend to use a little more polish with the coarser grades because you're going over and repeating the same step many times in order to remove the corrosion. But it's expensive by the pound, but it's pretty economical when you look at the overall cost of restoring the exterior on your trailer.
What are some of the common questions people have when they call up?
Well, the most common question is, what can I do to protect my trailer once I've got it polished? And unfortunately, I hear that at least once a day. There isn't much you can do except keep it inside if possible. Aluminum corrodes very readily. If it's left outside, it'll collect dirt and dust on the top, and when the dew forms or the rain comes, it'll wash that dirt and dust down the sides, and when it dries, it'll be mineral deposits that are quite difficult to remove. So it's kind of a shock to somebody who's worked for maybe 100 or 200 hours on their trailer, and then the first rainstorm comes along and it's all water spotted, and those water spots can be difficult to remove. We haven't really found a product that works well enough long enough to warrant recommending it. We've known people who tried virtually every product in the world. Some people doing aircraft have tried all the Teflon-based products, and anything that anybody offered has been tested. And at best, they give you a few months of protection. And so a general recommendation is we just don't use anything. Just try and keep it clean.
Yeah, that's an ongoing process, I think, to try and keep the shine up.
Yes.
For sure.
If it's inside, it's quite a different story. I mean, Harlan and Shirley Manning parked their trailer for 2 years in their hangar, and when it came out, it looked exactly like it did when it went in there. And that's because they kept their hangar dry and they kept the trailer covered. So if you can keep moisture away from the aluminum, you won't have any problems. You'll have a very long-lasting shine.
So you mentioned 100 to 200 hours. Is that typical to polish a trailer?
That's the number I hear most common. People are doing a pretty good job on a trailer. Tell me it's about 200 hours. And I've known people who spent 300 hours because they were either just putzing along or just being really, really meticulous. So if you're looking for a kind of finish that people are going to go ooh and ah and crowd around your trailer, then you would have to expect to spend about 200 hours would be a good guess.
Unless, of course, you got a really big trailer.
Well, of course.
Or if you get 200 people come to your house, Tim.
Yeah. That's right. I'm welcome. Come on.
No, I was just going to ask, how did you get started into this perfect polish arena?
Well, I had an airplane that was painted, and about 15 years ago, I decided to strip it and polish it, and it was very corroded, and in the process of restoring that aircraft, I learned quite a few things. But one of the things I found is I couldn't find any of the cloth that was necessary, the cotton cloth that you use to do the polishing with the cycle polisher. Very hard to get it. It's almost all polyester, 50% poly. And, everyone else had the same problem, at least I thought they did. And so I went out and bought a bunch of pure cotton cloth and, made it available over the Internet. And after that, I kept adding products and so forth, and to the point now we pretty much have hopefully one-stop shopping for your polishing projects.
Now, you're talking about these cloths. Are you talking about the cyclo wraps or the microfiber towels or the terries?
Well, the microfiber is something that's come along in the last few years, and we find it very useful. It's a major improvement. But the cotton fleece, which that method of wrapping that around the cyclo polisher was developed by the Swift Aircraft Association probably back in the mid-1980s. And they're the ones who also discovered the Nubite polishes. So this whole polishing system really starts back with those people. And we've taken it and modified it a bit and hopefully improved on it. And but one of the things that was always difficult was finding enough rags to do the job right. And, after you did one polish, you were all out of old towels and all out of old sweatshirts and, people hanging around the Salvation Army stores trying to find, old clothes to buy so that they could, go back to polishing again.
Now, once you got the trailer all polished and it's nice and shiny, do you find where the trailer, I call it sweat, where it can sweat the black aluminum residue so that you have to keep cleaning it until you get that, where it's coming out of the pores? Do you find that at all, or is that something
That's kind of, I've not heard that before. I thought all your trailers were well sealed. I thought all the seams were well sealed, and that's one of the issues that's been discussed a lot is how to seal the seams and how to avoid, how to polish when you've got sealed seams.
Well, what I'm talking about is I'll polish the section, and I'll wipe it down and get it to where it's clean, and the next day I go out and I wipe it with a dry rag, or I get black again off that dry rag, and where I could have swore I had that section cleaned. So it feels like there's just stuff coming out of the pores of the aluminum.
Well, when you go back on a polished surface and go over it with a solvent, you'll pick up some of the black. What it is, it's the carrier in the polish, and that's actually some of your protectant.
Okay.
So we recommend you don't wipe with solvent after you've polished, because the carrier in the polish is providing some degree of protection for you. And that's what you get. I mean, if you're going to do anything with aluminum after you polish it, you have to do a solvent wipe to get rid of the residual polish, because there always is residual polish, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
We always clean it off with mineral spirits, and it never comes completely off, and we end up, we found that the Windex without the ammonia, I think they call it a surface cleaner or something.
Yeah, Glass Plus. Yeah, there's one.
Yeah, we do that right after the mineral spirits, and that's what really brings up the shine for us.
Oh, really? Yeah. When I've used mineral spirits, I don't use mineral spirits on the final step, but on the intermediate steps, I use mineral spirits, and of course, it dries to a cloudiness, and then you just go and wipe it off. I don't think I ever went back the next day to see if there was more still coming out. That's kind of new information for me.
It's kind of amazing, because we would do what you're saying there, use the mineral spirits, and it would come up cloudy. And you could wipe it with a rag, and it looked pretty good. But you could take that Windex stuff and just spray it on there, and literally it just starts running black again.
Well, aluminum is very porous, and there's apparently some of the mineral spirits and polish are, in the grain of the metal.
Yeah, the other thing that we found that's actually cheaper than the Windex that works almost as well, strange as it may seem, is windshield washer fluid.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's a buck a gallon. You spray it on, and it does the same thing.
Oh.
What are you guys experimenting with everything they're calling?
Yeah.
You name it.
That's the way you learn.
Yeah. Very good.
A lot of things, I'd like to say one thing, though. You should never use a product that's got ammonia in it, because that will etch the aluminum. Windex has ammonia. You shouldn't use that. There are plenty of good things out there, Glass Plus and automotive spray detailers, and as you mentioned, windshield washer fluid, that don't have ammonia and will do a good job of helping you clean up.
Well, the Windex that we use it says right on it, no ammonia.
That's
the critical thing, because if it's got ammonia, I don't know what it leaves there, but it certainly leaves a film that does something bizarre, and I guess that's exactly what you're talking about. It does something not very good to it.
Well, it'll actually turn it dull. It'll etch it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that we've been surprised at, we've used some microfiber cloths. We find that, on a really shiny surface, they actually scratch it worse than the buff does.
The threads that are used to edge bind the microfiber will scratch. And you have to be very careful about not getting those, next to the aluminum.
Okay.
It's one of the reasons we sell a little larger towels. It's a little easier to do that with our 16 by 24 inch towels, to keep that edge binding out of the way. I tried, and there are varying degrees of different qualities in microfiber towels. I've found some that scratch very badly, and it was just a bad batch from one manufacturer. But in general, I went out with microfiber towels and using the heel of my hand, rubbed as hard as I could to see if I could get it to scratch. And when you do that, you can get scratches. Anything with enough pressure will scratch the aluminum. But in comparison to T-shirts or cotton fleece, they're much easier to deal with and much less prone to scratching.
Well, I've been very amazed at how soft the clad actually is. We've gone to a point where the surface is absolutely perfectly polished, absolute mirror, and you go up to it, and just to show people how soft it is, that area can be completely clean. You can put a little bit of spit on your finger that's clean and rub your finger up and down, and then clean it off afterwards and look at the spot where you're rubbing your finger, and I've even seen scratches in there.
Oh, yeah. You can take an old T-shirt that's been washed 10 times and soft as it can be, and just rub it lightly up and down, with finger pressure, and it'll scratch.
It's really amazing.
Yeah.
But aluminum alloys really differ. The alloy you're talking about is an all-clad surface, which has a very pure, soft aluminum coating on it. If you're dealing with car and truck wheels, those alloys are really, really hard, and they don't scratch very readily.
Now, Tom, you're out in California, correct?
That's correct.
The do you do actual polishing yourself where people bring their trailers to you, or is it just you provide the polishing materials?
I do demos at Airstream rallies and so forth, but I no, I'm not in the business of polishing.
Okay.
I don't blame you.
All right. Well, Tom sure helped me with my Safari, the last trailer. That's where I got a lot of questions answered. He's very free with the information. And as everybody knows, Perfect Polish and Nuvite are going to help out with polishing the, well, providing the products to, for me to polish. You bastard. You know, come to think of it, that might not be helpful. Yeah. Anyway, we sure do appreciate it, Tom. And I know you're you're open for people to call you with their questions about polishing and and all
absolutely,
that.
Yeah. I spend a good part of every day on the phone, and, you know, that's just part of what we sell is, you know, you get all the information you can use.
Yep, there you go. That's perfectpolish.com. Well, thanks a lot, Tom, for being with us today.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, take
Tom, I'd like to add that I did buy a huge bundle of wraps from you some time ago, and we use them, and they are great.
Oh, great. I'm glad you like the product.
Very good, very good. All right, Tom, take it easy.
All right, thanks. Good.
All right, guys, well, that's pretty good information.
Yeah, it is. But, Rob, you didn't spill the beans that you've been polishing your trailer with toolbox polish.
Oh!
Oh, well. It works pretty good.
What's this?
Like, it's the Canadian Essence.
Ah, yeah. What's it really called?
That's the name of it, Canadian Essence.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. No. No, no, no.
That was your bottled water.
I think it's Diamond Bright Diamond polish Bright. Or something.
Ah, yeah, 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 yeah.
It's
I don't know. Have you seen them up front, up close there, Colin? Are they as shiny as the 65 you did?
No.
First cut.
It's pretty good for a first cut.
Yeah.
But in reality, the issue with that stuff is that, you know, I don't think you're getting in the nooks and crannies as easily as we do with the other compounds. And it's, as you noticed, even with that stuff, Rob, it is a ton of work.
Yeah.
You got, It's a ton of work. Whatever you find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, you got to use the big, the heavy coarse product and the heavy duty compounder to really reshape that aluminum to get a polish that's going to last.
Yeah, but keep in mind, really, you know, the point he was making was you start with the least aggressive that you need to, because you can put more damage in the metal than what's there now.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's part of the art of it, knowing what where your trailer lies with those different grades.
Right, and it actually lies all over the map, depending on which part of the trailer you're working on. So it's quite interesting there. We've used Nuvite, we've used all kinds of different types of compounds. We've tried everything, much like Rob is, you know, trying all kinds of bizarre methods. But, you know, the F7 is probably a good one to start with.
Mm-hmm.
It considered a medium grade. If you've got something that's really horrendous, like the F9 can work. But, you know, if you put F9 everywhere, you're going to be doing a lot of work.
Go ahead.
I've tried the Nuvite. You know, I've got some Nuvite here. I've tried the Rouge bars. Some people swear by the Rouge bars and the red, green, and whites, the Diamond Bright and all. You know, this trailer had 50 years, almost 50 years. I don't think it's ever been polished. So I'm pretty much done with the first cut, and I've got a Cyclo now, so I'll be starting with the much finer stuff soon. Colin saw it. It beats up pretty good, too, down at Cherry Blossom.
Hmm.
Yeah, but you know what, Rob? You have to go over the whole thing again with the same compound level with the Cyclo, and then you go to the finer stuff.
Right. Yep. So.
Need to make a little announcement, one I don't really like to make. Don and Claudia are bonded by Aluminum Buddies. They ended up having to cancel their cross-country trip. Remember that we were going to follow them across country when they were going to go from California to New York?
Yeah, what happened there?
A close family member passed away, I think. Maybe unexpectedly, I'm not quite sure. But they had to cancel it, and they might try it next year. But heart goes out to them. Sorry they couldn't complete it this time, but we'll be up for it next time whenever they can do it.
Yeah, that's really too bad. I was looking forward to that cross-country expose day.
With all kinds of exciting adventures, like I think you have an exciting adventure there, Colin, in your Airstream. Why don't you tell us about it?
I'm the proverbial adventurer here. As I guess Rob is. Well, we all are, I suppose. That's why we own Airstreams. But
you didn't poke your eye out on this one, did you?
No. But I do things equally as silly, though. I think everybody remembers our last show at the Cherry Blossom Rally in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Well, I guess we did that show, I guess, the Thursday night.
And yeah, yeah.
The rally was due to finish on the Sunday, but around...
I started a mass exodus Saturday morning.
Yeah, oh. Everybody was listening to the weather and discovered that there was this nor'easter coming to the Northeast, basically on Saturday night or Sunday. So on the Saturday, they decided to move the main dinner from the Saturday evening to the Saturday noon time so people could leave if they needed to get back home again before this huge storm swept across the East Coast. Anyway, I left late Saturday afternoon, managed to make it to just inside the New York border on I-81. By Saturday evening when the pouring rain and stuff, and had a very comfortable sleep at a rest stop / state trooper barracks on I-81, and woke up the next morning, headed up to Binghamton on 81, and then started heading east on I-88, and somewhere east of Oneonta on the way to Albany, snow started coming in and getting thicker and thicker, and we saw spun out cars all over the roads, etc. And we had a rather close call coming upon another accident where I put the brakes on and basically nothing happened, even though I wasn't even going that fast on the highway.
Nothing happened meaning you kept going, you didn't stop?
Exactly. Ah. I was slowing down at a very slow rate.
he was waving to the SOBs as he slid by.
Oh, looking for the runaway truck ramp.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, I slid by an assortment of campers, etc. While I was stopping, and when I finally came to a stop, there was a motorhome next to us, and they rolled down the window and said, "Thanks for not hitting us." And I said, "Well, look back behind you. There's three more trucks and campers behind you that I slid past." And I was only going about 30 miles an hour coming into that whole exercise, but and they were moving going into it, and so was I. But anyway, we managed to come to a stop, and at that point, with my almost 5-year-old son, who didn't, you know, just thought this was the normal way of driving.
He was shouting, "Do it again, Dad! Do it again!"
Yeah, see, didn't faze him at all.
See, your mistake, Colin, is you should have drove home in the snow backwards, because the shine from your Airstream would have melted the snow and cleared you a path.
Well, it would have, see? Had there been sun.
Ah. I thought I had it figured out.
All this, without a Hensley hitch.
That's right. I hit the brakes. And I put it neutral and stuff, but I'll tell you that this, I have a, we should thank our, I don't know if they're a contributor or not, but they certainly came on the show. I have a Reese dual cam sway control hitch, and this was a kind of a radical move, and we went dead straight in our slide until a stop.
Oh, yeah. So Reese is a, oh, Reese is a contributor. Yeah, straight line hitch, and it worked. Kept you in straight line.
It's amazing. And quite frankly, I thought for sure it would have jackknifed and slid off the side, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, we came to a stop, and I kind of, you know, Malcolm was going, "What are we doing?" And Malcolm's my son. And I said, "Well, we're waiting for that accident to clear up ahead, and we'll wait for all these cars to get out of the way." And we did that, and then about 100 yards or so past the accident, we decided to get off at the exit and couldn't even make it up the exit ramp. We had to put it in four-wheel drive just to get off the interstate. And as soon as I got off the exit ramp, I noticed a nice big sign saying truck parking. So I pulled into this sort of area, and it was all snowed in. You couldn't really tell what was parking lot and what was field and what was what. But I drove into an area that I thought made sense, and proceeded to unload him out of the truck and put him into the trailer with his DVD player and his coloring books and his cars and all this stuff, and jumped into the trailer, lit the furnace, turned the lights on, turned the DVD player on, and spent from 1:30 Sunday afternoon until, I guess about 9 or so the next morning, in the trailer, looking out the windows at this snowstorm that's ravaging around us, with snowplows driving by, doing turnarounds in this parking lot, and emergency vehicles going by with lights on, etc., and me listening to my my miniature weather band radio, and using the cell phone to catch up on weather, etc., from Rich Lure was one, and I spoke with Rob as well. And we just sort of hunker down in the trailer to be safe. And
turn into a survival pod.
Exactly. Yeah. It you know, it really is a method to save yourself, be it a storm where your power goes out at your house, you just move into the trailer, or if you're away, you can. You know, my wife said, listen, any chance whatsoever of getting in an accident, get off the road. And it worked beautifully because we never put a scratch on anything, and we arrived home safely Monday afternoon. Although it took 10 hours to drive down to this rally, it took us 48 hours to get home.
Oh, man. Well, we're glad you survived the ordeal and put your trailer to the test, but let's not do it on a regular basis.
No, it's amazing how comfortable they can be. You know, we had all the comforts of home there, and we went to bed comfortable and slept soundly, and, you know, we had power. And one minor drawback I had was my main propane tanks. I should have probably filled them up before I went on this rally. But so our main furnace went out at 7:30 that night, but I did have a couple of the barbecue 20-pound tanks with a backup Mr. Heater, which I ran for the night, and it was plenty warm, and so we, it was very, very comfortable staying in the trailer with piles of snow all around us.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah.
I got another Airstream.
You didn't. Come on now.
A 74 Argosy, 24-footer.
That's not an Airstream.
Yeah.
Well, it's made by Airstream.
Doug Robottom keeps thinking it's an Airstream, but I keep telling him it's an Argosy.
Although it's not made in Jackson Center, you know, it's still made by Airstream, and it's allowed in the WBCCI.
Well, I think it was made in Jackson Center. I think, wasn't there a plant just down the road from Airstream?
It was called Versailles, or I believe the Versailles plant. I'm not sure exactly where it was, but it's close by there. But so it's a 74 Argosy 24-footer.
Cool.
Yeah, that's going to be your office or what?
Who knows? I don't know. I've got to clean it out. And I've got four or five people I know that want an Airstream or want a trailer. So it's got a good door handle on it. It's got an A&E awning on it. And you know, I need some floor work up front, but don't they all?
We went down to the local Airstream dealer this past weekend to turn in our coupon for the free Wanderlust book, get them to fax it off, and looked at some of the newer ones while we were there. And we got to see a base camp as well. Pretty interesting vehicle.
I did the same last Friday when I went and got the Argosy. Saw a base camp for the first time, and got to see some of the new Airstreams. You know, that breeze.
I'm going to go over to the Burlington, Vermont dealer at some point in the next week or two and go have a look at them as well so I can get my free copy of Wanderlust.
You know, when I was there at the dealer, I walked into the Airstream, and it was the Breeze International model. I walked out and hit my head on the top of the door, and they've got these nice padded cushions on the doors now, so when you're walking out, you don't bang your head. But I looked up, and I always said, you know, you can tell an Avion from an Airstream because the Avion had a square door. But if you look at these new trailers, they've got an Avion door on them.
Yeah,
they're no longer curved like the old vintage Airstreams. I found that quite interesting.
Well, they've still got a bit of a curve on the corners there, but Yeah, they're pretty flat on the top.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Avions had the same about a bit of a curve too. I just found that interesting between the vintage and the new ones now, the little subtle differences.
Well, if you have a real good look at the roof of the new ones, the roof is pretty flat as well.
Hmm.
Doesn't have anywhere near the curve of the old ones.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. The wide bodies, it made it a little flatter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We got time for a question, guys?
Sure.
All right. Let's pull one up here and see who it is. Hang on.
All right.
Hey there. My name's Jeff, and I live in Vancouver Island, British Columbia. I have a 1969 Overlander, and recently my neighbor's weed eater there knocked out one of the original the street side front corner wing window. And it was just a single pane, but
ouch!
It is no longer any pane. So I researched a topic on the forums there, and I found a couple old posts, one by Andy at Inland RV, and he mentioned that there was a replacement part available, although I've been unable to track that down. So I just figured that was an old post. The other one was actually by Ambassador Tim there when he was Safari Tim. And he detailed his fix on his webpage there, basically just shear off the rivet heads and pull off the frame and make a template from cardboard. Is this the only option? And if so, could you just please go into a little bit more detail regarding grades or the particulars of the Lexan? I know Andy at Inland mentioned Acrylite. And is there no need to do anything from the inside? Is it all from the outside, or will I understand all this when I get to this stage? I know, Tim, you also mentioned a separation bar. I didn't know if that was just the actual piece of metal between the two windows. Again, will this make more sense once I'm at that stage? Look forward to hearing any of your advice. Thank you for the show. I enjoy it, and I'll be listening to, well, the back episodes there when I get a chance. And hopefully you're able to help me out. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling that in. That's British Columbia. That's pretty far away, huh?
Well, it's pretty close for you. I used to live in Vancouver many years ago.
Oh, yeah?
And I've been to Vancouver Island. I've still got family in Vancouver Island. Beautiful place. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, that's part of the rainforest, strange it may seem, in Canada.
Ah.
An official rainforest.
Must be nice.
Collins lives everywhere.
A world traveler. Yeah.
There you go. But you know, this question, this really brings up something interesting because, Tim, obviously you went through a similar issue with repairing a window.
Mm-hmm.
We've had to do the same thing, but we didn't actually fix it with Lexan or plastic of any sort. We just got a replacement window from a junkyard.
Right.
And one thing I did discover in the process is that, you know, he could find a junker Argosy and use the window from that. And those windows carry through right up until the later model trailers.
But he said 69.
That's a transition year, isn't it? For a 1 year window.
Right, it doesn't wrap around.
Mm-hmm. On the bottom. The bottom is square and the top is round.
Right. You're right.
So that makes his problem harder.
He has to get a 69.
Yeah, you're right.
It's even different than my 71.
Yeah, now I should point this one out, that remember our buddy Pete Daniels, he's got a 69, and he bought a wing window for a 69, and it with the square corner, and it didn't fit. So I don't know if there's a variety of 69 shapes around, but
when I heard wing window, Colin, and I was already, I got a parts trailer outside.
Yeah.
But then I heard 69. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Well, if he wants to sort of update, he could put the, and we're in the process of doing this on a customer trailer, actually. We were putting the later model big wraparounds on an early trailer.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah. And believe it or not, we're doing it front and back. Hmm. But
some heavy duty modification.
That's some cutting.
Yeah, that's some modification.
Right, but the interesting thing is we're solving sort of two birds with one stone because there's some dents in the aluminum right where the wraparound is going to be cut out, so we'll save him from changing some of the pie cut sections.
I was just wondering if his neighbor realizes he actually did it.
Yeah, that's one thing I always worried with my 71 is something like that would happen because all those windows were rounded corners and stuff like that. Now in my new one, yeah. I don't have to worry. In fact, I bust them on purpose, if you read the blog.
I did see that.
We've done that as well, actually, because it's easier to break them than it is to cut all the stuff out the inside to replace the sealant.
Yep, that's what I just did this past week. The only problem is I can only find 16th inch glass instead of 3/32nd. I hope that's not going to be a big problem.
Now, Tim, you replace
yours with... Go double thick. That's what we do.
8th inch?
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't know if 8th inch would fit, so I went with 16th. Well, it's in there now. When it breaks, I'll get the bigger.
On your trailer, Tim, you replaced yours with Lexan?
Yeah, let me go over that a little bit.
Did they leak?
Yeah.
They all leak.
They all leak.
Well, they all leak. I know. We always say that.
Actually, he probably still has the gasket. See, I didn't have... Mine came busted when I bought my trailer and had two sheets of galvanized steel duct tape to the front of the trailer.
What a deal.
Yeah, what a deal. So, the process is not too bad. The center bar that he's talking about is when the wing wrap window comes up to the center window, there's a bar there that connects the two together. And what you do is you take like a tapping block and like from the bottom, and you get right on the edge of that bar and you tap it straight up, and you can reuse it. They're still available if you end up messing it up like I did.
The gasket is as well. I bought some on eBay, but I know the Airstream dealers still have that gasket that the glass sets in.
Right. Yeah, you definitely want to get a gasket, because I didn't, and I just used Volcom on it, and it could end up cracking every once in a while, and I have to reseal it. But the next thing I did was to get the rivets out. Now, I know a lot of people like to drill them out and stuff, but what I like to do is to take an old chisel, and I just tap the heads right off, bing, 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 all the way around, and I was able to pull the window right off, and that just left the little rivet bodies all up around, and then I just cut them flush, because when I went to put it back, I just drilled all new ones. Then once you have the window out, it comes out as one unit with the aluminum frame. There's a couple of screws that hold the flat side on, and that unscrews, and then that whole side comes out, and then it leaves the curved part with the remains of your window and gasket in there. Then at that point, what I do is I got some cardboard, and I just kept cutting it and pushing it in there, and putting it all back together until it fit right, trimmed it, tried it again until it got perfect, and then I got some, I think, 1/8-inch Lexan from like Home Depot, and used the cardboard as a template, used a jigsaw, real easy, you cut it real easy with a jigsaw, it doesn't crack or nothing like regular plexiglass. And then you put your gasket on at that point, slip it back in, tighten it up, and you're good to go. There is one thing with Lexan, like at Home Depot, is one side is to face the sun, and the other side isn't. So it's marked on there. You got to watch that. One side's okay to be out in the sun. The other side's for the inside.
Should point out though that Lexan is the trade name for polycarbonate,
right?
And plexiglass is a trade name for acrylic. And Lexan or polycarbonate typically is twice as expensive as acrylic. And Lexan / polycarbonate, much easier to work with. When you try and drill it and saw it, it won't shatter like acrylic does.
Right.
So although you'd see something that looks identical, there is a huge difference.
Yep. So it just takes a little practice, a little patience, making your template. And they're different, so don't try to use the left one for the right one if you had to do both like I did. So after you get it all back together and you're happy, you just hold it up there and you start off with one rivet hole and just re-drill it out. I used Olympic rivets, so you probably wouldn't have to take the inside apart. And go all the way around, put your Volcom on first, drill it out, put your rivets in, and then tap your bar back down from the top, and you're good to go. And those bars are, if you'd mess it up, I know, because I had to buy new bars. They're still available. But anyway, it can be done.
That's Colin's.
Or you could chase down some Argosy windows or wraparound ones and really get some people wondering what a 69 is doing with wraparound windows.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it'd be cool.
Rob, did you want to talk about that little item you mentioned real quick? Or is that
the
something
fact that
you
got
while?
A new headset?
Yeah.
Oh, I did get a new headset.
Oh, did you?
No, I mean, well, it's an issue out there, and you know, Colin and I are both in WBCCI, and mm-hmm. you know, it's coming up to where they're going to be voting on it and everything, and it's this whole motorhome issue and allowing non-Airstream brands into the Wally Byam Caravan Club International. You go out on the forums or just on the Airstream list right now, it's big hot topic of what's going to happen if they take and allow a club that's always been Airstream only for 50 years, and now they want to open it up to different makes. So there's people with certain opinions out there, and it's just going to be a hot topic. It is a hot topic right now. And
maybe we could devote a whole show to that whole deal, maybe have some guests that have got some heated discussions going.
You know, there's the whole SaveWally.org website out there that's got a lot of information on it. I know there's the Region 1 site that's got a lot of information, as well as some of the unit presidents, region presidents' words and stuff. But there's arguments that where they're doing it because of membership. There's arguments because Airstream doesn't make motorhomes anymore, and it's just a really interesting dilemma that we're in right now with the club.
Well, I can guarantee you they're going to lose more members than they are going to gain by adding a Four Winds Mandalay whatever motorhome. But you know, I suspect there's going to be some people that push it through and then don't get it when everybody bails.
Yeah, well, I've already gone on record as I'm one of the bailing, joining the ranks of you, Tim.
why do you guys keep trying to get me to join a club that has so much controversy? I got enough problems.
If this vote goes, I'm coming and joining you, Tim.
All right.
Well, hang on a second. I had this great suggestion today on Hunter's List where they said that the
our unit president said what we should do.
Yes, what he suggested was that we could start another club with an assortment of probably the vintage club members and maybe an assortment of units. Could start another club called the Wally Byam Caravan Club, and then I suggested that possibly we could, if we got a unit from Canada or Mexico or possibly even South Africa after this caravan takes place, we could call it the Wally Byam Club, Caravan Club International, or WBCCI for short. We could let the original WBCCI change their name to the Airstream Club or whatever they wanted to do last summer. That way, we wouldn't have to get new graphics, we wouldn't have to get new flags, we wouldn't have to get new numbers. They would just spend all their money changing their name to the Airstream Club and then allow Mandalays into it.
I don't know. Sounds good on paper. Somehow, I don't think you're going to pull it off.
The Armandalay Club.
they called it an air delay or something club.
We're going out on a limb here,
we're
Tim.
Going
there's just a lot
fast.
Of there's a lot of controversy there, so it is a show that we could probably spend quite a bit of time on bringing different members on, but just if you're a listener out there and you got an opinion on it, call in. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah, we'll play. Yeah. We'll just play.
Vote
on the
no
other
to mojos.
All right, guys. Now, on a positive note, have you guys got the latest issue of Trailer Life magazine?
Woo-hoo!
May edition?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do, too. Do you, Tim?
Yeah, I finally found one today. I've been trying for a week.
Tim, I got mine at Borders.
Yeah,
Tim,
there you go.
Tim put in a $600 GPS Borders, Barnes & Noble. He had to drive 300 miles today.
Yeah. I mean, in the last couple of days, I did go to three different stores, and I finally found it here in town. It was in the wrong section on the very top shelf somewhere.
So why are you asking us if we have a Trailer Life?
Well, because there's a special article there on page 26. guys might see a familiar face.
Yeah, we got a. There's a picture of our host in there.
Yeah,
in all his glory.
Right, right.
It is pretty neat because the previous page has a vintage Airstream on it, and then you turn the page, and then there's another vintage Airstream decal.
Yeah.
No, there's a vintage Airstreamer on it.
That's right. That's right. The ambassador is a side shot of the ambassador himself.
There you go. Yeah. That doesn't get any better than that. Well, maybe it does.
Let's hope it does.
Yep.
Well, hopefully we'll have some listeners from the Trailer Life world, and they can enter into the Mandalay debate as well.
That's right. Hey,
they can call in their questions. We've taken non-Airstreamer questions in the past. And,
That's right. We've
managed to scare away our Bounder buddy.
I do miss our Bounder buddy.
Yeah, we'll have to see if we can't get him back on here.
Maybe he's seen the light. You never know.
All right, guys, we're going over time here, so we'll have to
just
cut it out here, and we'll catch you next time.
All right. Good night, all.
Good night, everybody.
I'd like to thank our caller and like to thank Tom for PerfectPolish.com. Take it easy.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Want to get in contact with us here at the VAP Podcast, you can call the voicemail hotline at 206-202-4VAP. And the email address is questions@thevap.com. Rivets? We don't need no stinking rivets.